Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, 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 oh. Wake up. Time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we're just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right, we can't do it alone. Welcome to MPH Radio. This is the 27th day of November 2021. Our theme today is taxing the rich. Is this a good thing? Is this a good policy? We would like for you to weigh in today as we discuss this missing page of history when it comes to taxing the rich. Along with this previous theme, we also would like to inform you that we will have a segment dealing with giving you something to think about with its freedom, followed by MPH Black Meaning Facts, then a message from the community by Alex Joyner, and then we'll go to our discussion that thing and close out with MPH announcements and how you can support MPH. That is the order of the day for Mr. Paisley History Radio. And we can get started this program as we want to give you something to think about. What is freedom? Well, John Henry Clark talked about this concept of freedom and this concept of struggle in this context of this particular statement he made. He stated, "With your survival, draw on the intellectual heritage of the whole world, but always start with your own intellectual heritage." Let me read that again correctly. He stated, for your survival, drawn on the intellectual heritage of the whole world, but always start with your own intellectual heritage. That was Dr. John Henry Clark. The next conception of freedom and struggle is by Frederick Peso Apache, stated, the surest way to cure a race is to cure its religion and ideals. Can anybody doubt that the white race deliberately attempted to do that? That is to kill the souls of a people. And when the spirit is killed, what remains? That's interesting. Let's say this one again. The surest way to kill a race is to kill its religion and ideals. Can anybody doubt that the white race deliberately attempted to do that? This is to kill the souls of a people, and when the spirit is killed, what remains? And last one today, and not the least, is from Brother Steve Biko from Tanzania, South Africa, where he stated, sure, there are a few good whites just as much as there are a few bad blacks. However, what we are concerned here with is group attitudes, politics. The deception does not make a lie of the true. It's merely substantiate it. Let me read that again by Steve Biko. Sure, there are a few good whites, just as much as there are a few bad blacks. However, what we are concerned here with is group attitudes and group politics. Deception does not make a lie of the rule. It merely substantiates it. So you have heard some concepts and some ideas from these freedom fighters and people of goodwill. What we're right now going to do is we're going to take a break with music with a message. And when we come back, we'll be back with Susie as she will talk about and share with you some black mini facts. So please get your pen and paper out. And we're going to see some black mini facts shortly. We'll be right back. This is the voice of MPH Radio.
Wow.
Right, we want to make these times good, not bad. MPH is all about making humanity better and uplifting our underserved communities. And one of the best ways to do this is to give people positive information, truthful information, information that will stimulate you to a high level activity that leads towards creating a better world for all mankind. And one of the methods that we can use to do that is to share with you some of our history. What if people have produced before, they can produce again. And right there, we're going to turn this mic over to Susie or MPH Radio, and she can share with you some history of our people under the theme MPH Black Benefactor. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
To give you the Black Minute Facts from the PRSP calendar of November 2021. And we're going to start with Sunday the 21st and it'll end through Saturday, November the 27th. The first one, which was on the 22nd, the Minute Fact was Canadian masses repulsed imperialist aggression in 1970. The next one is ZANU of Zimbabwe launched guerrilla war in 1972. On the 23rd, J. Love invented the pencil sharpener in 1897. And also on that date, Morocco began to fight against Spain for the liberation of Spanish Morocco in 1957. On the 24th, Scott Joplin, composer and musician, was born in 1867. And also on that date, Ron Delmas, member of the U.S. House of Representatives, was born in 1935. On the 25th, the U.S. installed Mobutu as their neo-colonial puppet president in Zaire in 1965. Also, the Pan-African Revolutionary Socialist Party was founded in Washington, D.C. in 1983. And last on the 25th, Fidel Castro, revolutionary and first president of socialist Cuba, died in 2016. On the 26th, the death of Sojourner Truth, African freedom fighter and women's rights advocate in 1883. And last and final minute fact for November of 2021, 1,300 African workers go on strike against BMW in South Africa in 1981. There, I've given you some mini facts for the week of the 21st through the 27th, which comes out of the PRSP calendar of 2021.
Thank you, Susie, for the MPH Black Minifacts and to our listening audience. We hope that you pay attention to these minifacts because what this does is it just serves as a reminder for you to not to forget the contribution that your people have made to humanity. Also, it serves as a reminder for the rest of the world to remember that we contribute to world humanity as well. So we'd like to thank Susie again for her MPH Black Minifacts. You listen to the voice of MPH Trivial. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, you have a special message to the community for Elvis Joyner. He always comes with something powerful and something of interest. So don't you go nowhere. This is MPH Radio, and what we want you to do is remember, if you want to move forward, if you want to be treated with dignity and integrity, if you want something, you got to go for it. You got to get up and stand up. Stand up for your rights. So we'll be right back. This is MPH Radio.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up.
Preacher man, oh, tell me, heaven is on the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter told. I've said the story has never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your rights. Come on,
get up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours unhurt. And now when you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah.
Get up, stand up.
Yep, yeah.
Stand up for your rights.
That's right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Stand up for your rights. Don't you give up the fight. And we're not going to do that because there are people has a history of being one who was strived for not only for their rights, but the vengeance of all people. This has been a part of your pages of history that has been missing. It is the resilience of our people fighting for their rights and fighting to improve humanity for all mankind. And we're going to see a reflection of that, because like always, our brother Alex Joyner going to come and bring a special message to our community. Brother Alex, what you have for us today? A message to our community from Alex Joyner. Welcome to MPH Radio.
Well, again, thank you. And I pray that everyone had a blessed and giving holiday, which they made an effort not only to receive the many blessings that were abundant this year for many, but also to give to the ones that did not have much to receive. So I'd like to thank all the listeners and callers today I thank the guest speakers and these commentators for their facts and opinions that they will present. I thank the staff again, Susie and Mr. Robinson, for bringing us this knowledge and uncovering the history that most of us have not learned in the public education system. Over the past few weeks, I have watched and listened to the lawyers and witnesses who have spoken in the murder trial of Ahmaud Arbery killers. I had great compassion and sympathy for his parents as they sat and watched the degrading of their son. Mr. Arbery was murdered in cold blood after running for his life for over 5 minutes. 2 weeks ago, in my message to the community, I mentioned that the color of his skin had sentenced him to suspicion and a wrongful death. That being black is enough for suspicion, ire, and swift civilian justice. His father said, what we all know is true, my son died because the color of his skin. We as a people cannot continue to ignore this growing racism in America's neighborhood. Running while black is not a crime, and has been presented before the Supreme Court. Black joggers have the right to run in any neighborhood, even if the residents don't want them to. The streets and sidewalks are paid with the people of color's taxes, and they are citizens of the United States. To avoid running while black as a jogger, you must make sure you have on bright clothing. Never run after dark. Never carry a bag. Never wear a hoodie. Never run from the police. And never run fast in a white neighborhood, or it could be your last. Mr. Arbery's murder has been overshadowed by the person he was. As a former athlete in high school, Mr. Arbery loved to run. It was so relaxing and tranquil to do so. He ran not only for his health, but to clear his mind of the pitfalls of life. Running was his personal getaway from the perils of life. He enjoyed jogging to the full. As in most cases of a racist murder, the lawyers for the defense turned from self-defense to destroying the humaneness of the victim. When there is no reasonable defense for a terrible action, the defense usually turns to attacking the lifestyle and character of the victim. Defense lawyers in this
everyone back to MPH Radio. There have been some technical difficulties, some kind of way we have lost Alex. We hope to have him in. What we're going to do right now is we're going to take a quick station break, see if we can get him back on. And we will continue this program from time to time. As you know, when we do programs, strange things happen to our production, which is beyond our control. But this, too, is a continuation of our missing pages, and we're going to try to correct these pages. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll mess with music. When we come back, we will continue the program and hope to have Brother Alex back. We'll be right back. This is MPH. Radio.
My knees.
We'd like to welcome you back to the MPH Radio. Before our break, news with a message. We had some technical difficulties. We lost our Brother Alex. We now have him back. We'll go back to Brother Alex. And Brother Alex, you can continue your message to the community in whichever way you think is best suited. Welcome back,
okay,
Brother Alex.
Thanks. All right. Thank you, Mr. Lee. When there is no reasonable defense for a terrible action, the defense usually turns to attacking the lifestyle and character of the victim. The defense lawyers, in this case, took it a step further. They began to attack the group of people who were giving comfort and support to the Aubrey family. Seven times, the lawyer made remarks about the black pastor that prayed and upheld the strength of the parents as they saw the horrible videos and pictures of their son with a gaping hole in his chest, bruises on his face, and other injuries suffered due to the close contact of the shotgun blast. The family was in torment and needed those black pastors for Christians support. So I ask myself, why do we need black pastors? I'm enraged by the comments made by one of the defense lawyers at the trial of the Ahmaud Arbery killers. He truly believed that a racist comment of we don't need any more black pastors in the courtroom to sit with the family would swing the jury his way. The statement alone was made in ignorance and hate. The miseducation of the white race in America was shown in this trial. When the enslaved Africans were finally allowed to worship, they had to pray to a Jesus who was often depicted as a white man with long blonde hair and blue eyes. They had to stand or sit outside the slave owner's house of worship in the cold or rain while the masters were inside, warm and dry. There were no pews or benches available for them to sit. These so-called good Christians did not believe in religious integration inside their house of the Lord. Being held in chains, beaten, and tormented daily, they felt the slaves had no soul were saving. Regardless of the religion or sect or faith of people of Africa were seen as heathens and needing no salvation, which was the opposite of Jesus' teachings. As more slave owners raped their slaves and fathered children by them, they wanted their offspring to learn to read and write and also to attend church. Then these children will live and work in the plantation home and serve their masters until death. Many of the field slaves brought the rhythm and dances from their homelands of Africa and would sing and sway as they worked. The days were long and hard, and some mental, soulful relief was needed to survive the harsh treatment they endured. One of the first black preachers was a free man named John Moran, born in New York City, who was ordained May 15, 1785. He traveled back from England after the Revolutionary War and settled in Birchtown, Nova Scotia, and later lived in Boston, Massachusetts. He spoke of the hardships blacks endured and became chaplain of the African Masonic Lodge in Boston, a group active in the movement to abolish slavery in the United States. During that time, he published the works noting the equality of men before God. He preached to anyone who would listen to him. He died at the age of 35, but gave his young life trying to change the Christian views of the enslaved Africans being mistreated in America. It was not Christian to treat another human being as inhumanly as Negroes were being treated, he preached. Over 50 years later, another black preacher, the famous Nat Turner, preached that the chains of slavery were wrong. The raping and killing of the people of color was wrong. That the slaves should rise up against their oppressors and die as free men rather than work to death as slaves. His many sermons gave hope and strength to many Africans who had given up hope of a better life. Many other preachers and speakers, such as Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, began to devote and console the free and enslaved Negroes in America. These early black pastors became the foundation of black religion in America. They took on the roles of their white counterparts and became the first one to call when trouble started. They were the heart and soul of the community. The power of the moving of the spirit of the oppressor was shouldered upon them. They became the speakers and teachers of the community. The black pastor often studied at white schools of divinity and could preach in almost any city in America. As African Americans tried to patent their lifestyles to white Americans, they also began to choose their religion, becoming the Methodist, Baptist, Presbyterian, Catholic, or whatever religious sect their masters were. The brave black pastors who chose to preach against the unfairness of the laws and the government of America were often persecuted and lynched. Yet others who took their place began to console the families of daughters who had been raped by white men or black fathers who had been lynched for no reason. They visited black sons who were falsely accused and sent to jail for life. They performed the first legal marriage instead of the customs of jumping over a broom. They found the good words to say when a loved one died and was buried without a grave marker. Yes, these black pastors have been there for the people who they love. From the Montgomery boycott came a young preacher named the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Dr. King began a movement which would lead a nation into integration from segregation by showing America its true self. Separate but equal was fair to no one, and many black pastors took to the streets in protest. Black pastors have led the way in all areas of our lives. Yes, thank God for black pastors. Many over the years have turned to various forms of religion or no religion at all. I even heard a gentleman say that America only needs one religion, a white man's religion for a white man's country. As I sat and watched the black pastor who consoled and sat with the Arby family, I felt the heartbreak and loss of a good child at the hands of bad men. They chased him down until he was out of breath. He was scared, and they had cornered him. He saw no way out. He was outnumbered 3-1. With one shouting, he was going to blow his head off. He was murdered simply because of the color of his skin. Yes, the black pastors sat with the family, and many stood in unity outside of the courtroom. Some were frail and old. Some were young and strong. Some of them hollered and shouted. Some were famous and some were not. But all of them stood in unity that this murder was wrong and justice must be served. When the verdict came in from the jury, I was traveling alone. I had to pull my vehicle over and turn off the motor. The spirit of righteousness was in the courtroom as the family and pastors prayed for the justice for a beloved son. I closed my eyes and prayed for the family if the verdict had not been not guilty. But prayers were answered for black pastors that stood steadfast and weren't intimidated by old Jim Crow tactics. No, I don't believe that things were changed because 12 people saw and heard the evidence that these men were guilty. Things change when people organize and stand together and say, we are not accepting this treatment anymore. Had a mother and father not made a call for prayer and justice for her child, there would never have been a trial. The faith of prayer is still a powerful weapon. We still need those black pastors with courage, strength, and faith to fellowship us until we leave this world that has been against us from the moment we were born. I would like to personally thank my cousin, the Honorable Reverend Leon White, for his contribution and involvement in the civil rights movement and the many, many, many families he consoled over the years. His speeches and marches for equality have inspired me to keep the message of true freedom, true justice, and true equality for the people of color front and center in our everyday lives. We have been fooled and misinformed for centuries, and we need to wake up everybody with facts and history. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Brother Alex Joyner for his message to the community. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to talk just a little bit. He put us in, gave a good background to give you an opportunity to express your understanding and your analysis of what took place last week as relates to the verdict that took place as relates to the death of Ahmaud Arbery. What do you think about the decision that came out or came from the recent courts around this particular case? Many people believe this case was somewhat like a trade-off for the Rittenhouse case, where a verdict was made to have satisfied the majority of African people, leading them down the road of believing in the system again, in which it implies that the system works. I'd like to hear from you today in terms of your thoughts, a decision, and how did you view overall narrative of this issue of people think that they can have a right to dictate to others, police others, on the pretense of certain laws that seem to be where they are only entitled to. So what we're going to do right now for a few minutes, before we make our transition to today's theme, which is taxing the rich, is this a good policy? We'd like to hear from y'all on this recent decision around Ahmaud Arbery. What do y'all think? We'll open up your line at 818-337-0016. MPH Radio, please hit 1, and we'll acknowledge your last 4 numbers. And right now, we can go to caller 6057. We're going to bring you in. Your thoughts on the recent decision that took place. Caller 6057, the mic is yours.
Thank you for having me. Revolutionary greetings to the listening audience and the panelists on your program today. Let's see, in terms of the verdict that was reached in the Arbery case, I think it was a just verdict, and I think you know, people's anger would have been even greater than what it is had they not reached a verdict of guilty for murder. Because clearly, you know, from the evidence that was presented, Arbery was ruthlessly hunted down, shot and found guilty without any trial or due process, and that was based on a citizen's arrest law that dates from the 19th century. In other words, from the days when chattel slavery existed in Georgia. So I think, but I don't think that this is a time for people to let their guard down. It's a time for organizing and politically educating our people, especially our youth, of the dangers that we're still confronted with, of, you know, by racism, even in the 22nd century. And this is the danger, and it's a time for us to study our history and to organize, so that we could that we can prevent future cases from this from occurring in the future anywhere in the U.S.
Thank you, caller. We'll put you on hold. Let's take our next caller. Let's see what our next caller has to say about this recent decision. Caller, your last four numbers are 2714. Welcome to MPH Radio.
Greetings, Brother Lee. Thank you so much for having me here again on MPH. And I just want to it's a pleasure to hear everybody on the call, Brother Anthony, Brother Alex, and Sister Susie. My emotions or my what I feel about the case is that, you know, I concur with Brother Anthony. It was the right verdict. It's obviously they were guilty of hunting down and killing this young black man, African male. You know, there's no question that was a guilty verdict that they was guilty in killing his brother. But I always question decisions made by the United States American government or the judicial system. I think it was also strategic on their behalf, because we've seen this time and time again when Europeans get off for murdering African people. But in this sense, I always question, like, what's the objective of why, even though we know he was, it was obviously he was guilty, and we've seen this before when guilty European males get off for killing the African people. But I question, what was their motivation in going along with the right verdict, which they would sound guilty? I believe also that we will never know, because it didn't happen. It didn't go that way, thankfully. But if it did went in the way of them getting a lighter sentence or a lighter verdict, I think right after this Rittenhouse situation, I think we probably would have seen a repeat of what we've seen in 2020 and what we've seen over and over again, whether it's the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, these come and go rebellions when a member of our grouping or our people is murdered. I think we would have seen that again. And we're still seeing protests, in response to the Rittenhouse verdict. But I think that would have basically activated these protests if a lighter verdict was granted in this case. But I hope I answered your question, and that's my contribution towards that. Thank you.
Carl, you made an interesting observation, and I'm sort of traveling down the same road with you in terms of trying to figure out the rationale of why they decided to do what's right on this particular verdict, given the history of they have normally taken a different role or ignored the truth and was just a fail. So I too wonder, what was the motivation behind this? Was this more not about what is right, but more about making sure dealing with the temperament of the people not to have a explosion within this country around the issue of race? That's an interesting observation you made. Right, let's continue and get some other people some opportunity to share their thoughts on this particular phenomenon. We bring in Susan Page as a female, as an African woman. Susan, what is your thought on this recent decision last week?
What I think about the recent decision, one reason that it was made that they were found guilty is because when you look at the Rittenhouse case and when it comes to finances, how he was able to raise all the money for his defense and everything. And when you look at these three what killed Aubrey, the thing of it is they didn't have even the political backing. If they would have had that, I believe they would have gotten off. But because of the fact we're still looking at, they're no more considered, they might as well be considered black as well as Rittenhouse, even though they were white, and just that difference made a difference in them getting sentenced versus Rittenhouse.
That's an interesting observation. I also raised that question too, Susie, in terms of what was their connection, those who did the killing, to the rest of the community, to the particularly the white wing community, as relates to the kind of support that Rittenhouse received and the lack of financial political support seemed like they didn't get. I often wonder about that as well. Thank you for your response. Let's take this other caller that's been waiting here patiently. Caller, your last four numbers are 4298. Caller 4298, your thoughts on this case and this decision. 4298.
I thought it was a correct verdict. Greetings to everyone within the sound of my voice. I thought it was a correct verdict that they hunted down him, attacked him, and when he resisted, they claimed he was attacking them. And when they I thought the prosecutor did a good job of summing that up. And so I thought, the verdict was correct, and I hope that, we can. There's some consciousness developing in this country, hopefully. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. And before we take our station break a message, music with a message, and then come back with our theme today, which is taxing the rich, is this a good policy? Emmanuel, I'd like for you to weigh in. I'd like for you to weigh in, Alex, on your thought of this recent decision in terms of do this because of the right thing to do, or there were other forces that forced them to arrive at the decision. I'd just like to hear your thoughts, Alex.
Okay. Mr. Lee and all the callers who've given us very good reasons of why people make choices. And when you get 12 people together to focus on something, then they usually have their own ideas about something. And lots of time if you served on the jury, you sometimes have your mind made up, maybe on a case you've heard in the news or whatever, but you're supposed to weigh the facts. And in this case, I hope that they weighed the facts, looked at the evidence, listened to the testimony, reviewed the video, saw the pictures, and did not go on emotion, did not go about the worry of how many neighborhoods would be set on fire or how many buildings would be looted. There are many things that could have happened had the vote went yay or nay. But the financial backing, no, was not there. Because sometimes even with people with money, nor losing case. So you don't support sometimes an idea that you know is a loss. So they went after the Rittenhouse case more so because of the NRA. People wanted to own guns, and this person had an assault rifle. So when you got a shotgun and you blast somebody away, it's totally different. You got an assault rifle and you murder 30, 40, 50 people, it seems to be pretty standard in this country as we look at Columbine and many other incidents. There's a different thinking in this country of owning weapons, having weapons, displaying weapons, even if you're underage now, to take them across the state line and to swear out that you are helping somebody protect something, someone you don't even know. Police officers who have never called you to do anything, but you there to protect someone else's property. Well, whose property is that you're protecting? Are you in a black neighborhood willing to stand out in front of a black barbershop to make sure that it's not looted by whites? I don't think so. So we have to look at all the framework that goes in both cases. And when you have judges that also tend to favor one idea or another. Not all judges will be fair. Not all people will be fair. But sometimes, even in the unfairness, there's justice. And in the Aubrey case, there came justice, even in the unfair. And my heart goes out to both families, everyone that's involved, because it's the victims that we need to care about. The verdicts are one thing, but we're going to have verdicts in many cases. But it's family after family after family after family that we're losing. So we need to support these families and give them whatever we can give them. GoFundMe pages and everything else that's been set up. And help these victims, because some of them will get money, but some of them won't. So we need to make a list and say in our cheerful giving that we look out for the ones who've lost the most. Because losing a son, losing a daughter, losing a father, losing a mother, it's a terrible consequence to any gun violence when it's wrong. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Alex, for your assessment of that recent decision. We'd like to thank all our participants for giving us their assessments of that recent decision. What we're going to do right now at MPH Radio, we're going to take a station break, music with a message. And when we come back, we're going to discuss our theme today. Our theme today is taxing the rich. Is this a good policy? This is an issue that is very rarely discussed within our community, but it's an important issue because it has impact not only of our community today, but will impact our communities for years to come. We'd like to hear your thoughts on this issue when we come back, and we would like to continue to fill in these missing pages of history that come from the perspective of our experiences and our understanding. So we like to do that when we come back. This is MPH Radio. So we're going to take a quick station break and going to give you some music with a message.
Me no one know the demon. sitting in the morning sun. I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change, everything still remains the same. What 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. It's 2,000 miles I roam, just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on a dock of the bay, wasting time.
That's right. Those two songs represent a dichotomy of our life. Many times they have us feeling like we're living on the front line, while at the same time we're sitting on the dock of the bay, look like we're watching time pass away. How do we deal with these contradictions? And that question can only be answered by the masters of our people. What we going to do? What we going to do? But whatever we do, we should make sure we fill in our missing pages of history and notal pages, so we will not repeat the same errors again. Again, this is the Voice of MPH Radio. What we're going to do right now, we'd like to have an honor discourse, a discourse that we rarely talk about, but is much needed, around this concept of taxing the rich. Is this a good policy? And to preface this particular theme tonight, I'd like to just give you a little backdrop on a real interesting article that we chose for the week that we want you to check out from Bloomberg magazine. It's an article dealing with this issue of Bill Gates and his foundation. And let me just read a little bit about the nature of this article, and we're going to open up around this discussion. Some of the issues that were raised from this article must be answered by the society as a whole. It has all kind of repercussions on how we view the rich and how the rich use his wealth that has impact on our daily lives and our underserved communities and people. It's stated that last month, Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates surpassed Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos to once again become the world's richest individual, up to Bloomberg's Billionaires Index, buoyed by an enormous 48% increase in Microsoft share price this year. Gates has taken the title he last held in 2017. The outcome is partially on to the whims of Donald J. Trump. Microsoft recently, surprisingly, defeated Amazon's bid for a extremely lucrative $1 billion Pentagon cloud computing contract that sees the company instantly become one of the world's most important military and security contractors. This decision, Amazon alleges, was due to the interference from the president, who holds a personal grudge against Bezos, whose Washington Post has maintained a campaign of resistance against him. Gates also recently in the news attacking the wealth tax that Democratic president nomination candidates Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have proposed. I'm all for super progressive tax systems, but when you say I should pay $100 billion, then I'm starting to do a little math about what I have left over. The Seattle Navy said, for the record, he would still have over $6 billion. I just stop right there. For those who would like to weigh in on this discussion, feel free to call 818-370-0016 and make sure you hit 1, and I would acknowledge your last four numbers. I'd like to get Alex take to start off this discussion, Alex. When we read this article, it mentioned a couple important issues. Two questions from the top it raised, the issue of what is a wealth tax, so should we have a wealth tax? And it's really a good thing to have billionaires. Why should we have billionaires? Alex, I'd like to just get a response from you. Where are you at as relates to this article and those two questions?
Well, Mr. Lee, you know, going back to the founding and starting of the country, when they seeked out riches from India to be brought back, and arguably a man named Columbus got lost on his way going there, discovered, because they were already here. So, again, he happened upon the shore of these two continents called North and South America. And with the idea to bring the riches of this land back to their land, because power, influence, and wealth all go hand in hand. This country was started for that reason. It defied Britain because it didn't want to pay taxes. And it was only the wealthy that didn't really want to pay taxes. It wasn't the everyday colonials that didn't want to pay taxes. It was the wealthy. That's why those rich merchants dressed up as Indians and threw that tea over into the harbor in Boston, because they didn't want to pay the British taxes. The government was founded, and then there was an idea of how much money a person could make in America. Well, if you got free labor, you can make even more money because you're not paying nobody. So you bring the slaves over to become super rich, more rich than your cousins across the sea in England, France, and Germany. So it's always been a race to who can have the most. And when you're in a race to have the most, that's a hard race because you got to step on a lot of people to get there. And then you got to be able to influence different countries. You have to have some type of product to be exploited. regardless what it is, you have to influence people to continue to buy your product. When it comes to Bezos or Mr. Gates or any of the other billionaires that are out there, to say that what they have is unfair is a hard decision for me because I know how the society is built. So their unfairness to me, because I don't have the riches that they have. I could probably never acquire the riches that they have. But I don't desire them either. Because if I had them, yes, I would be more of a charitable giver. And Mr. Gates and Mr. Bezos, they do give huge contributions. But that means nothing to their wealth at all. So when Mr. Sanders and Ms. Warren are asking them to give back from all the huge tax breaks they have been getting for years, it becomes a problem. Because no one wants to part with huge sums of money. And any time, if anyone does the math and say $6 billion is not enough money to live on, then there's a problem. You have to be mentally deficient in some way to say that $6 billion is not enough money to survive. So the thing is that you want even more. More than that. Not more than you're entitled to, but you just want more because you want more power, more influence. You want to be that number one or two richest person in the world because you're on the lips and tongues of many people. So the decision and business decision sway your weight because of who you are. So when I look at all the different things, you know, he has done, whether it's good or bad, I look at the problems with the school system as far as the private and the charter schools and going away from the public schools because he's a big champion of private and charter schools and much more big champion of charter schools. And that means taking the investment out of the public school system and destroying it, though the test grades are no better between the two, though the attendance is not a great deal better between the two because, yes, kids drop out regardless what, private, public, or charter. So though you have the better teacher, you better have the better resources around going to those charter schools, again, you're in a fight for an individual's mental aptitude where they want to continue to go on to college to be even more successful. So if we destroy the public school system, then we'll have many uneducated people going into the job market. The higher-end kids that can really do a lot of things as far as the tech support, they will be from the private and charter schools, and they will make the bigger bucks. So as long as, you know, they can, Mr. Gates and different billionaires can control that thought that they can never have enough, but we can give just a little bit here and there, then everybody ought to be happy. But no, I'm not happy with the billionaires that are out here. I think they can do more. I think they can be taxed more. But that's another conversation. And I'm truly wanting to listen to see what, you know, other listeners and callers have to say. And thank you.
And thank you, Alan. So let's just do that. We're going to go to caller 2714. Caller 2714, what's your thoughts on this question? First of all, should there be a wealth tax? And two, should we have billionaires, period? Is that a good thing for the society or any society? What's your take, caller 2714?
Yes, brother. I mean, it's an obvious question because you're talking to a person who has a scientific socialist outlook on economics. Yes, the wealthy should be taxed, and not only that, we should go farther than that and do without these billionaires and do without these capitalists. Now, I'm going to pull something real briefly from the book titled Imperialism, The Higher Stage of Capitalism by V.L. Lenin. And in the book, he explains the six stages of capitalism, the first one being free competition. Free competition, a system which companies operate without a lot of government control and prices are determined by supply and demand. The second stage was cartels. Cartels, which is an agreement between competing firms to control prices or exclude entry of a new competitor in the market. The third stage is combines, the growing and single enterprise of different branches of industry. The fourth stage is financial oligarchy, the merging of bank capital with industrial capital. The fifth stage, monopolies, small groups owning enterprises. The sixth stage, the current and stage that we're in right now of capitalism, is imperialism itself. Is the territorial division of the whole world among the strongest capitalist powers. And I lead my response with explaining these six stages to try to give us a better understanding of what we're dealing with. Another thing I want to share from that book, but from the book of The Underdevelopment of Africa by Walter Rodney. Walter Rodney explains the relations of production, and that right at the current time, it was five relations of production, the transitions that us as African people went through, you know, communalism, which, you know, what socialism or the concept of socialism come from, you know, develop producing enough for everybody, not for a private enterprise, producing what the people need, what the community needs. Feudalism is that king and that queen system, or, you know, monarch. We're gonna work as hard for the king and the queen and you know, to build up that their empire, and that translated to slavery, which gave birth to capitalism and imperialism. Now, to get back to Bill Gates at hand, he is the baby face of present-day capitalism, present-day imperialism. Bill Gates is the one who got Xbox, got our kids, you know, playing his video game system with all his violence and with all his influence, Xbox. He controls Microsoft, how we do our PowerPoint presentations, you know, essays for college or what have you, resumes. He controls Windows Phone. He has a share in Comcast, AT&T, and MSNBC. And some of these organizations, Comcast and Microsoft, they have became more prevalent with the exploitation of the Congo for minerals like cobalt and coltan, and also uranium to help these video game systems, these digital cable boxes, these cellular phones and iPads function from that cobalt and that coltan mineral. We have to understand that not only in regards to speaking about the Congo and Africa, Mr. Bill Gates himself is connected with the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition entitled GAIN. And GAIN is an offshoot of his foundation with his wife. And what they do is they are in Africa right now, or what they call undeveloped nations of country. And what they are doing are bringing publicly funded seeds that happen to use GMO or genetically modified organisms in these foods or seeds to push out the local farmers, to push out and squash out the local farmers in Africa who has real nutritional food. Why do we have to have a GMO type of food for our people when we have local farmers who know what to eat for their health and know what to put in their body? I conclude with this. I urge our listeners and to quote Brother Moses, to borrow his quote, anybody who is in the sound of my voice, to go research the Dr. Sidney Gottlieb. Dr. Sidney Gottlieb worked for the Department of Agriculture, and he worked for the Food and Drug Administration. In his last years of employment, he was also worked with the CIA And what was he doing as a doctor working with the CIA was to develop poisons to use to assassinate some of our leaders, or an attempt to assassinate some of our leaders. One of our leaders who was in the fight for the independence of the Congo was Brother Felix Moumou. He was killed by the poison that was made in the factories that was led by Dr. Sidney Gottlieb. Not only that, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb also produced some poisons that was going to be utilized in the toothpaste for Patrice Lumumba. Now, you probably say, what do Sidney Gottlieb got to do with Bill Gates? Well, my point, I think I try to prove explicitly, is that Africa is the connection. The food and drug, food is the connection. These drugs, these poisons. And again, like, to go back to the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition that Bill Gates is a part of or leading this organization, they are single-handedly in Africa. All of these people represent European interests. They represent, whether you're talking about Bill Gates, whether you're talking about the CIA, or they represent capitalist interests, that power, influence, and wealth that Brother Alex spoke about previously. Now, I conclude by saying that I just wanted to get this information out and leave the listeners and people who are in the sound of my voice to make the connection. I conclude.
Thank you, caller. Let's go to caller 6057. Should there be a wealth tax? And is the whole concept of billionaire a good thing? Should we have billionaires in this society and others? Your opinion, caller 6057.
No, we shouldn't have billionaires because where there's wealth, there's also poverty. And the wealthy get wealth by consuming more than their fair share of the world's resources. That's how they get wealthy. So, no, I think under a just society, there would be no billionaires, just that there would be no poor people. Everybody would work for a living and would get equally compensated for equal work. Now, under capitalism, the society we live under, it is the people that are able to exploit the most that consume most of the world's resources. And yes, I think they should be taxed because they consume more resources than poor people do. But this is not a just society by any stretch. This is a capitalist society in which people can exploit one another based upon the power or resources they control. And I think there should definitely be a tax on the rich. As a matter of fact, the more you consume, the more you should pay in taxes, which the way it is under a just society. And also under a scientific socialist society, the playing field is leveled. Your consumption is based upon need, not on your power to exploit other people. And wealthy people get their wealth by exploiting other people who do not have the same power or control that they do. That's how wealth is amassed in this society. And a fair society is in which, there is not that huge disparity between one set of workers and another. And there isn't the discrimination that runs rampant in capitalism, where people don't get paid equally for doing the same work. So I think a tax on the wealthy is fully justified. As a matter of fact, they should be paying more taxes than the poor who have fewer resources. So I think there shouldn't be billionaires, because the word billionaires, that means that there are people that are really poor and suffering tremendously in order to keep a roof over their heads and provide for food, clothing, and shelter for themselves.
Thank you for your response, caller. Let's take this caller. Caller, 4298, your response. 4298.
Yeah, of course, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and so that's capitalism, and we have to recognize it for what it is. Bill Gates represents the rich getting richer. The amount of philanthropy that they try to show I don't think it equates to the exploitation that they've surmassed and accumulated. And we're trying to get some kind of equity of some sort for the people, the masses of the people of the world, for everyone, to eliminate poverty and have everybody have a enjoy a pursuit of happiness. So the taxing the rich, it's definitely something that needs to be done, but it seems, and the ruling class dominates the society, and that's the way it is. And so until there's a revolution where another class, the working class, takes power, we're going to be faced with this situation. And I'll just leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla, for your participation. What we're going to do is right now point out some interesting issues or observations that this article addressed, and I would like to have the listening audience to respond to them. One of the points that came out of this article that I thought was really interesting was the point that is that, firstly, if Gates is so committed to giving this money away, why does he keep getting richer? This is not a trivial question. His net worth has increased from $75 billion in March 2016 to a staggering $106 billion today, according to Forbes magazine. It's a over 40% increase in 3 years alone. And to add to that, it raised the issue of they know that it takes about $30 billion to eradicate hunger globally. It can get rid of hunger globally if they're investing $30 billion. So I'm just curious in terms of if they know that reality, why do you have mass hunger all over the globe? We'll start off with you, Alex. Your response to that phenomenon.
Well, again, when you look at if you own a monopoly on services such as Microsoft's software and hardware, when you're able to go to every country in the world and provide cell phone service, yes, being stockholder in AT&T and other communication media sources, you have a certain control over a government's decision. So you can only get rich while the people become poor, because you continue to buy smaller business and merge them. and you become a giant in the industry. Amazon and Microsoft are giants. It used to be the Rockefeller. It used to be the Morgans, the Carnegies. But now it's the Gates and the Beltons. So when we look at Bezos and what he's doing, and he gives also, but it's just a trickle of what they actually have. Because what they give away, yes, they make back in profit. Whatever they tax, they make back in profit. They are in a win-win situation. But again, their point is they want to continue winning. They want to continue to be on top. And regardless of who suffers at the bottom, because again, yes, they could wipe out hunger. They could wipe out a lot of different things with those billions of dollars. But having the resources to do it and doing it is two different things. It takes a special type of person to share that kind of wealth. And right now, we don't have that out of anyone at the top like that. So they will continue to give and give hundreds of millions of dollars away, billions of dollars away. But if you have hundreds of billions of dollars, $20 billion does not affect you. $30 billion does not affect you. You make that money right back up. You make it right back in all the ventures and different things that Mr. Gates has his hands in, his business interests in. So you just continue to bleed poor, undeveloped country because they need your resources and different things to improve their country. But it comes at a cost, as everything does in this world. It comes at a cost. So the people at the bottom suffer while the people at the top get rich. Regardless of how many trucks go into any area to give and provide aid and help or whatever, a lot of that stuff does never even get delivered. Food and everything just sits there. It's just terrible the way sometimes the aid is not carried through. The intentions are good, but the follow-through is a problem. And if you have that much money and you have that much influence, maybe you should be more on top of things if you claim to be a true person that wants to help everybody and everything. But when you get to that point, it's a little rough because you got so many different people pulling you different ways. But sometimes if you're the one in control of the money, and I do not know whether Mr. Gates is truly in control of the money. I'm sure he has hundreds of boards and all these different corporations and different things. And maybe he might give the final yes or no. But still, by the time the information gets to him, has it been distorted? Is it misinformed? What does he finally see as in who needs this and who needs that? And then he makes a decision of millions of dollars trying to do the right thing, but it ends up being the wrong thing. So, yes, a lot is happening, and Mr. Gates should be held accountable just as anyone else should. But also, in my heart, I've always felt it is wrong to have that much money. Not at all. I could not even live with myself, even the thought of it. Not at all. Because, as I say,
Alex, can I interrupt you 1 second and get your response?
Oh, go ahead.
They teach the policy of greed is good. Is greed is good? Some kind of way they let us sell the cans of good of believing that greed is good. They're not saying greed is bad, it's just sense, because it's philosophy of greed is good.
Well, that's, you know, what I said in the other opening of how the Europeans came here, looking for wealth. Once you came here, you know, your intention weren't even good, because you were looking to make more money. And when you look at billionaires, they're not looking to lose money. When you look at millionaires, they're not looking at losing money. They're looking at increasing wealth, not decreasing wealth. So that means if you got to help somebody out, you're going to decrease wealth. That's why you're going to be upset when you pay taxes and different things like that, is because you're decreasing your wealth. Greed is bad, but nobody wants to say that, because then nobody would want to aspire to be a millionaire. So to have those aspirations of greed, of wealth, of power, all intertwined together. You know, we don't have senators and congressmen up there serving for free. Lobbyists and different ones are knocking on their doors every day to get bills passed to help them. And if you don't think there's backdoor money, we used to call it pork barrel money, but if you don't think there's backdoor money coming in to support their agenda, and then you're going to make something out of it, yeah, greed is good. Because it's everyday thing. Everybody wants to have money. As Calloway's famous song was, "I want money." It's plain and simple. And so we have begun to teach our society that we want money. That's why people rob. That's why people steal, is because they want money, plain and simple. But how many people want to go out there and work hard for that money? That's what we ought to be teaching people, is to be self-sufficient, to go out there and get a job. And as my brother always said, go get a check. That's the most important thing that we should be teaching everyone, is you can go out here and make money. And like I said, that's why I say I don't have a disagreement. Man makes $1 trillion. That's up to him. If he's able to do it, whatever, it's wrong, yes, and I hate it, but I'm not going to stand in his way of getting there, even though it's wrong, because he has that knowledge of whatever to be able to get there. But once you get there, think about all the people that you can help, and that's what billionaires don't do, is think about all the people that they can help along the way. Yeah, we can get rid of college education costs. We can get rid of medical costs. We can get rid of so many things that these billionaires could help fund. But their idea is totally different. It's more money all the time. That's why the stock market continued to be good during the 4 years of the ex-president. And that was the only thing that people were concerned about, how good the stock market was. As long as the stock market was fine, everything was fine. Businesses closed down, shut down, everything. It was the nation, the people were dying left and right, but the country was still making money in stock. The rich were still getting richer. The message was still there. More greed is better. So until we can turn that narrative around and realize that giving is better, sharing, being equal is better, breaking up the monopoly, giving people a fair chance to compete makes a difference. Right now, we don't have that thought going across. It's just people who want to drive you out of business. That's about all. The Walmart, the Amazon, they just want to take everything and be that number one giant, as I mentioned before. So it's a lot of competition at the top. You know, we think about how much competition is in the bottom. But there's a lot of competition in the top, because big businesses do fail and they go out of business. So that's another thing that, you know, we have to look at. And whether these billionaires are worried about losing everything on tomorrow's stock numbers, I have no idea. But we see the stock market falls, and they'll say this billionaire lost $10 billion. This billionaire lost $5 billion. This guy lost $400 million. These are numbers that the American public can't even comprehend, losing that much money in one day. But yet and still, they're greedy enough to continue that plight, that this is the way, the American way, and this is how we should be. but it's a terrible way to be. But that is America. And that is capitalism. And I hope I answered correctly.
Thank you, Brother Alex. You can go to Carlos 6057. One other point they made in this article is of interest. We like to direct it to the attention of the people is that, and we like to get your response, Carlos. And it talks about there's no such thing as a free gift. It says philanthropy can and is being used deliberately to divert attention away from different forms of economic exploitation that underpin global inequality today. Now, what has been your experience, your undertaking of looking at how the wealthy use their money to influence movement, to create oppression in communities? I mean, they do all kinds of things in it with the intent of being perceived as doing good. Speak to that, Carla 6057.
Sure. Let's see. Philanthropy is a ruse used by the wealthy in order to hide some of their dirty work. They make donations to different charitable organizations in order to hide their wealth from taxation. And let's see, so they fund certain charitable organizations or certain political organizations in order to manipulate certain political trends toward their own interests. George Soros does that a great deal with his wealth. And actually what they do is they donate a relatively small portion of their wealth. But because their wealth is so large, they're able to exert a lot of influence over the organizations they fund. And it's a condition of this funding that they're able to maintain political control. As a matter of fact, they fund political campaigns for the same purpose. And they create these fundraising organizations called PACs, public, I forget what that acronym stands
PAC is
for.
Political Action Campaign. PAC, PAC,
yeah,
political Action Campaign.
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. And they use that to exert political influence way out of proportion to their actual numbers. And through funding PACs or political action committees, they're able to exert a lot more influence over capitalist legislatures than the masses of working people who simply do not have the resources to do that level of funding. And in capitalist societies, is those organizations that are able to raise the most funds that end up being able to arrange elaborate political campaigns in order to manipulate votes to justify to further their own interests. Contrary to what's taught in the school system, that's how politics works in capitalist societies. People buy political influence. They buy elections with their resources. And that is the key to how the rich, because they control who gets into political office and who does not get into political office.
Carla, you made an interesting point in terms of they control political office. Some people hear that statement want to know how do they do this at the expense of millions of people voting for a particular candidate. Can you talk about how do they circumvent that phenomenon?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Well, let's see. Political campaigns in the U.S. are very expensive. They could, depending on the office, they could run from several thousand to hundreds of thousand dollars, even millions of dollars. And a lot of that money goes to the media for advertising. And people are often swayed to vote one way or another based upon the publicity a candidate is able to draw to him or herself. And that's how a relatively small number of people, like the bourgeoisie, are able to control the outcome of elections by being able to manipulate the votes of millions of people through their control of the media and being able to buy airtime to get their candidates the most exposure. Because people go by the level of exposure a candidate gets when they make it their political decisions, as opposed to the content of the candidate's campaign or platform.
Thank you, Carla. We'll move on to Carla 2714. Another fundamental issue that comes from this article by the writer is that it talks about the attitude of the rich need to be adjusted. It is a sickness of the system that billionaires even exist. That's one of the positions this article has taken. Talking about the nature of the system allows them to exist. So therefore, to talk about this phenomenon, you got to look at the overall structure of the system. What is your response to that? Call it 2714.
If I understand you correctly, I mean they're spot on. You know, you have to be a wicked person to put financial gain over a human being's life. That's not humanistic. That's not a person who embraced humanism. So, you know, or egalitarianism, you know, the equality of everybody, that's not righteous, man. If you put a financial gain over human beings, like I stated earlier, capitalism was born out of slavery, meaning the oppression, the exploitation, the murdering, the rape of African people. Every part of the world we've been brutalized, man, and oppressed and enslaved. That's how these people gain their riches. Like Brother Alex spoke about Rockefeller. Rockefeller, one of the conglomerates that was in Africa that profited off of Africa, and they also also profiting off these seeds that I spoke about earlier. That Bill Gates organization, the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition, is doing. Rockefeller is under that. DuPont Foundation is under that. These people, you know, their whole appetite, their whole thing is about wealth, money, capitalism, wealth, minerals, resources, exploitation of labor, of our labor. We do all this labor, and we get a crumb of this wealth. We don't even get a crumb of the wealth. We get crumbs. Period. They get the bulk of the wealth. That's capitalism in a nutshell. So. If I understand you correctly, the journalist or the writer, author of the article, her system is operated. You got to be a sick person to, you know, to want all of this money while millions, billions of people around the world suffer from hunger, housing. Come on, man. We got to be sick. We over here trying to, America is over there trying to bully small nations like Cuba. Cuba put out a lot of medical health, doctors, medical staff, medical people to help with illnesses around the world. They've been doing it for over 3, 4, 5 generations now. But here in America, we just go into other areas and territories to cause war, destruction, to put military bases, AFRICOM, NATO military bases, to take over the land, to control the mining companies like the Zimbabwe. And I probably pronouncing it wrong, but if you look at this mine, this uranium mine that was in the Congo, the Zimbabwe mine, that they use that. The uranium to make these weapons. So I conclude with that.
Thank you, Colin. You're listening to MPH Radio. We're discussing the theme this evening. Taxing the rich, is this a good thing? We'd like to have your views and your perspectives on the theme. It's a theme that is needed to be discussed, particularly in the underserved communities. We want to fill in those missing pages. We'll make a couple more points of observation from this particular article. Have people to call in at 818-337-0016. Hit 1, and we'll acknowledge your last 4 numbers. If you have any comments or questions around this theme in this issue, please hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. Now, there are many other points of observation, but because of the nature of time, we'd like to give at least a couple more. We want to give people something to think about and look at how our society functions, how it structures, how it impacts people, how it creates new things and destroys old things. This is something that we must understand. If you want to change something, you must understand it first and foremost. I do believe we have a caller who just weighed in on this issue. We can go to caller. Your last 4 numbers are 4953. Caller 4953. Welcome to MPH Radio. Your comment question. 4953. The mic is yours.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
How you doing, sir? I always enjoy listening.
Yeah, it's been a while since we heard from you, my brother. Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Now, you know, my answer is that I don't think that the rich should be taxed no more than what's legally, they're legally bound to be taxed. And, you know, take Jeff Bezos. I think he's the owner of Amazon. He came up under a teenage mother who was 17, father was 19. He worked at McDonald's and paid for his education. And just because, just so happened, he came up with a good idea. And thus is the story of many of those who reach that type of monetary fame in the United States. So I have no problem with people that happen to come upon. You know, you talk about Bill Gates. I had a friend, well, a foreman when I was a young apprentice in one area. His son-in-law was working on computer wafers back in the 70s in his garage. Him and another friend was working trying to perfect the computer wafer that's found in transistors and also the electronics that we have in our cell phone and elsewhere. He was getting burnt up using the chemicals that he was using, but he wasn't able to go far enough. So that's I have no problem with people who become billionaires. Kanye West is a billionaire, and capitalism is a form of economics that I enjoy. I participated in myself. You never know how good it is until you go someplace else. Now, does it get abused? Yes, it does. I'm against abusing it. But you take some of these countries, these companies provide a lot of charitable gifts and support in all different areas, from schools to homeless and the building of research laboratories and colleges, even in historical black colleges. So no, they do the best. They do a whole lot. The Mellon Foundation is one, of course, Rockefeller. They do a lot. And I think that's something that we need to protect in this country, because if you take them away, then a lot of people, a lot of organizations is going to be without. I tell you a good example. You had 99 corporations that contribute to your civil rights movement. Steve Korn and Audrey Mellon of the Mellon Foundation was two of them that took that over. And Malcolm X talks about it, about the $400,000 and where it came from in his Ballast of the Bullet speech. Thank you for the opportunity, sir.
Okay, Carlton, thank you for your response. We're going to go to our next caller. Caller, your last four numbers are 393943. Welcome to MPH Radio. Your comment or question, caller. 3943.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I agree with the last caller that the rich shouldn't be taxed more. If when you calculate actually how much taxes they're actually paying, they pay about 40% of the entire taxes for the United States, which is a lot. I think that our government needs to start controlling its spending and prioritizing spending in areas that are much needed rather than their pet projects, and that goes for both sides. I'm just talking Washington in general. They give so much money away that's earned by hardworking taxpayers without regard for taking out of their children's mouths or their mouths, you know, the people's mouths in general, trying to put a roof over their head and meet their expenses every day. And so I think if they just control their spending and start having pet peeve projects, like, you know, how fast a grasshopper can run on one of their mini treadmills, no lie, they have these type of tests and research and stuff, just giving money away left and right. And I think if they just control their spending, and as far as the rich are concerned, they give to charities and they do pay a lot of taxes. And if they were to go away, then the debt would fall upon us. There's nothing stopping these people from moving away. They're already hiding their money because of the high tax rates in business, because they're two separate. They have their personal income and then they have their businesses. And so the businesses is, you know, as far as their capital gains and so forth that they make, it is 40% of the United States taxes that are paid. And so, yeah, I think that's where I'm at on that.
Carl, let me ask you something, get your response to my statement or narrative, okay? I'd like to have your opinion on this. You don't see a problem creating a society where you allow individuals to have more wealth than domineer a whole country. You don't see the issue and the danger of a society where one individual can have a great influence on your political system more so than a million people. You don't see no issue when this individual becomes so wealthy that he down here can form his own army if he wanted to. You don't see a issue and a problem with that. And how do you generate wealth of that magnitude without having a large form of exploitation as it relates to the workers? I'm just wondering, how do you rationalize that from your perspective, Carla?
Well, I don't actually rationalize it, because there's really no rationalizing. It's kind of a trick question, I would say, only because the person that has all of this wealth, it's not as if that person didn't earn that wealth. At some point or another, whether it was given to them, inherited, at one point in the life of that generational wealth, somebody had to have earned it and then just passed it down. And right now, currently, people like you know, like me, like you, I mean, you know, as far as money goes, I live in California, and it's just my husband that's working right now, so, you know, we don't have much, but if I had an invention, an idea, there's nothing stopping me from thinking, creating, and trying to put that forth, something that people would use, something that people would buy. And but what other corporations, as far as the amount of money that they earn, that's not capitalism, that's corporatism. And so that is bad. That is definitely bad because it creates a generational wealth gap. But, you know, right now people, because of the way things are going with this great reset, land is being sold by owners, landowners, where they're requiring either no down payment, $99 down. They're selling their land so this way people can hold on to the United States, parts of the United States, without having to go through the bank. And so that's a way of creating generational wealth, depending on where you buy your plot of land. An acre, 2 acres, you know, can be $2,000 or more or less. But right now, if you look under landowner financing, then because just between you and the owner of the land, because they own lots and lots of land, these landowners anyway. So you pass that on. You don't have to build anything on it right away, but you wait for the right time to either sell it or build. There's all kinds of ways to make money. It's just a matter of doing it or learning about it, you know. So, I mean, I know about these things, but yeah, I'm old and lazy, so and I admit it. But it can be done. It can be done.
No, you're not lazy, Carla. You're not lazy. You're intelligent, young lady. But what I would like to do, Carla, I'd like to thank you for your response, your opinion. This is a question that we must be answered collectively. And you must learn from our experience. So we like to thank you, Carla. Thank you for tuning in today to Missing Pages of History and share the word that you can catch us every other Saturday, biweekly, at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So,
Carla,
you thank you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You had just heard it from our sister from the big state, Kelly. She gave her perspective on this question. What we're going to do right now, we're going to take a quick station break, and when we come back, we'll just give everybody an opportunity to get our final thoughts on the subject, taxing the rich. Is this a good policy? This is MPH Radio.
Let's talk about living, had enough of dying, not moving.
We welcome you back to MPH Radio. Yes, we are here. We're here for the underserved communities. We're here for humanity. We're here for the righteous, and we're here for those who are willing to do the right thing. We'd like to remind you that MPH Radio will be listened to on a bi-weekly basis at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, U.S. Please spread the word to join in. What we're going to do right now, let me make announcements. After the announcement, we're going to ask our participants and those who are listening in to just give us their final thoughts on the theme tonight, taxing the rich. Is this a good policy? Right now, when we talk about missing pages of history and understanding our people's history and the contribution that our people are making, we are asking our supporters and listening audience, when you get this word, to please support Pan-African Roots as it publishes Volume 1 and Volume 2 of a new book whose author is Bob Brown. The name of the book is Volume 1 and Volume 2, We Demand the Full Disclosure and Digitization of All Slavery Era Records. It's an excellent book. You should have this book in your library, personal library at home, and through all the institutions. Please go to the website to find out more information about this book and how you can purchase it by going to www.a-aprp-gc.org. Again, help support Brother Bob Brown. Help get this book in your library. Read the man the full disclosure and digitization of all slavery records, volume 1 and 2. For more information, go to the website www.a-aprp-gc.org. Our second announcement for today is to inform you and ask all our brothers and sisters and freedom-loving people to help join Missing Pages of History Radio and support us and network along with the African Awareness Association as we join them, take their annual tour to Cuba. They have freedom rides. They go to Cuba every year, but this year, under the leadership and members of the MPH Radio, we would like to go in honor of Brother Emmanuel Joyner, who's one of the co-founders of this station and one of the very important members of the development of Missing Pages of History. We signed a pact prior before he made the transition, but that was one of the things we had set aside to go to Cuba last year before he made the transition, that he wanted to go and he wanted to ask his friends to support his family member to be a supporter, and let's go to Cuba and take a look at Cuba, get to learn about the system, but to learn from their experiences, to go and fill in this missing page of history. Cuba has done and continue to do so much for Africa and African peoples out the world. At the bare minimum, we can remember the lessons that Brother Kwame Ture, formerly known as Stokely Carmichael, left us, which was the greatest crime or sin a man or person can commit is to be ungrateful. So we ask y'all to please go to the website www.aaa-cubacubatours.com or email the African Awareness Association by emailing African Awareness Association 2, all spelled together, at gmail.com. Come and join us. Come help live out the legacy and the wishes of our brother Emmanuel. And let's go this summer to Cuba from July the 23rd to July the 31st. July 23rd, July 31st, 2022. Let's act now. So those are our lessons for today. We ought to remind you that because still the nature of this pandemic, we have on hold many of our activities because we're going to, we don't want to do things haphazardly and put people in risk. So right now, we ask you to support the radio station by sending us your email, how you can be contacted. We can send you programs on past and present shows, and like always, we can use your support. So if you'd like for your friends and supporters of MPH Radio, email us at mphradio@yahoo.com, and we will share with you how you can become a friend and supporter of MPH Radio. So those are our announcements for today's program. what we're going to do, we can go back to our participants and listening audience and ask you to make your final thoughts on the subject. Taxing the rich, is this a good thing? Now, we're going to start with those last four numbers, each particular phone number, and you can make your comments if you have any. Okay, we can go through this particular caller, being on the line for a while, see if they have something you'd like to say. Caller, your last four numbers are 3164. Caller 3164, any comments or questions you'd like to make or have in relation to this program today? Caller 3164. Okay, I guess 3164 has no question or comments they'd like to make. We'll go next to caller 4298. Caller 4298. Your thoughts for today's program. 4298.
Thank you. I think the essential thing to remember about capitalism is that it is socialized production with private appropriation, and that so that the workers are all working together to produce this product that the owners are able to use at their own discretion, and so the workers end up being exploited in terms of their labor, but they're not paid justly in terms of the benefits the product brings. They don't get their fair share. And so that's socialized production, private appropriation. And so that's the key thing to remember about capitalism. And that's what we're fighting for, equality, equal rights, and justice. And it's a lot easier. It's a political economy. You have to accept this arrangement as a just arrangement, and the politics of the day have to be such that it allows for this to happen. And under socialism, there would be a whole different political consciousness, and that's because of the political economy. It would take a whole different political consciousness in terms of who's in power and what is acceptable and what is unacceptable. And so these are the critical issues, I think. And I'll just leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. We'll go to your last caller of 3164. Any question or comments? 3164. If no comments, questions, let's move on to caller 8175. Caller 8175. Any comments or questions for today's program? 8175.
Yes, yes, how you doing? My name is St. Q. Smith. I'm calling from New Jersey. I'm a friend of Don Jr.'s. He invited me to the show. I just caught the bitter end of the show, but, you know, it sounds like, you know, people's trying to unite and bring a lot of positivity together and show people how to come together in a different way, you know. And you know, I see y'all movement and what y'all trying to do. Y'all can also advertise, you know, everybody who has a product or service, they you can advertise on oneoverhere.com for free. I don't know if you heard of the website. It's the number one, OVERHERE.com. And you can advertise any product or service on it, whether it be, a motivational speaker or, you know, whatever category is one over here for you. So I would like, you know, y'all to share that on y'all Facebooks, Instagrams, and Twitters. I can be reached at area code 302-613-8175. Also, on the oneoverhere.com website goes directly to my email. So any product or service, I'm willing to help anybody, anything I can do, let me know. You can contact me directly through CEO Don Jr. Thank y'all. Have a great day. Have a great show.
And caller,
I look forward to our show again.
Thank you, caller. Can you just give us your first name and we'll get back with you? What's your first name, caller?
Cinque. Cinque.
All right, thank you very much, my brother. We'll get back with you. Thank you for your support.
Have a great day, sir. No problem. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, moving on. We're going to bring in caller 9289, your final thoughts for tonight. Call 9289. 9289. 9289. Okay, I guess the final caller don't have nothing to say. Let's move forward to caller 2714. 2714, your final thoughts and comments for tonight.
Yes, I just want to say this was a good show every week. Thank you so much, Missing Page of History, Sister Susie, Brother Lee, for having this platform, Brother Alex for his wonderful dialogue and information. But I just want to make one response to the notion of that capitalists, you know, they work hard and they earn what they have. That's a false. That's very false. So I just want to say, people who have that notion, what I'm interpreting is they really believe that the slave master worked so hard to earn their fortunes. The colonizers that came in Africa, they worked so hard to earn their fortunes. The Firestones, the Liptons, the Rockefellers, the Beards, you name it. They worked so hard, you know, while millions of Africans or millions of people, what they say, of color or non-European people, or some European people too, who are workers or proletariat, being exploited. They earn it. That's a false notion, and I had to make a response to that. I couldn't sit on this platform and act like that wasn't stated. But you know, we got to challenge those type of beliefs. You know, we can't allow that propaganda or whatever you want to frame it or call it to persist, because that's false. You know, they didn't earn it; they stole it. They killed people and murdered people for it, but I just wanted to make that response. But also I want to thank Brother Anthony and Brother Moses every week for their contribution to this platform. Thank you so much.
Amen. Greetings in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. This is Pastor Don Jr., CEO. Thank y'all for all listening. Thank y'all for receiving my text and calling in. You have to move in the spirit of God. God is important. God is real. I heard some of the comments from some of the other speakers. Shouts out to the one over here, Brand. Shouts out to everybody under the sound of my voice who believe in the Lord. In Jesus Christ's name, amen, amen, and amen.
Yes, we're going to call the 4953. 4953, the mic is yours. Okay, there are no more comments for 4953. Let's move on to call the 6057, 6057. Your final thoughts, 6057.
Yes, yes. Let's see. I concur with Brother Maurice's comment. Let's see. Capitalism is the economic system that got us in the situation we're in today. And so it can't be the solution to our problems. I would suggest that that people do research in the history of capitalism and how it developed from slavery, feudalism, and chattel slavery in the Western Hemisphere. And let's see, and our ancestors paid a heavy price for the burden of the onslaught of capitalist exploitation. And I would urge everybody within the sound of my voice to check out the history of capitalism and how it emerged from the exploitation of one human being by another, and continues into this day to be that same form of exploitation, and therefore cannot be the solution to the problems that are facing kins and other oppressed people throughout the world.
Thank you, Carla, for your contribution to today's program. And we have our final thoughts and comments from Alex Joyner. Brother Alex, give us your final thoughts for tonight. Brother Alex.
Well, again, I would like to say happy holidays to all, because it's been a good holiday for me. And I pray it's been a good holiday for everyone else. But beyond our welfare and our safety and our consciousness of thought, I have to stand with Maurice, some of the other callers. I can't remain silent when I hear that on the backs of others, I've made my profit and it's all good. That's what we have to look at and say, the miseducation of the wealthy. When people develop an idea, invent something, market something. As a business owner myself, I understand the value of personnel. With the right personnel, a company can take off. With the right product, a company can take off. And they can make millions and billions of dollars. But they do it at the expense of somebody or something. And that means low wages, increased profit. That's why I say it. If they make billions of dollars, that is fine. But you have to realize you have to give back to society, because it is wrong, morally wrong, maybe not legally wrong, but morally wrong, not to give back to your brother in need or to bond someone into slavery or to bond someone into low wages and no benefits. The biggest arguments in Congress over the past couple of weeks and passing legislation has been about helping the nation, everybody, the poor, the middle class, and the rich. There was no bond there in Congress. The ones who were rich wanted the tax break. The middle class wanted the infrastructure. The poor just wanted a piece of the pie. Congress turned their back on the American public, because it was offered at over $3 trillion. We spent over $11 or $12 trillion fighting useless wars for the past 10 years. We could give money in a fight to people we don't know, countries we have no business in, and just give money away, throw money away, because of business interest, where the rich got even richer. But when it comes to America itself, where you have the homeless, where you have the hungry, where you have the uneducated, where you have men behind bars that should be free, but you turn your back on your own to seek riches elsewhere, that is what America's about. Look at the stock market tomorrow and see where the stocks fly. America turned its back many years on its own people to seek other riches. And it was because of the rich people in Congress who make those decisions. It's not the poor. No, they are being lobbied by the PACs and the lobbyists to continue making more money for the ones who sent them there or paid their affiliation present on certain votes. It is a shameful thought for any moment that anybody can go forward and be that successful without hurting someone else. It can't be done. So we have to re-educate the ones that want to be rich, seek to be rich, think they're rich. We have to re-educate them and make them realize, yes, the same gentleman that worked at McDonald's or whatever once he become a super billionaire, that all that wealth that he got, all the companies he merged and took over with, employees lost jobs, lost benefits. Amazon is fighting for union, just for fair rate. Walmart for years has been fighting for fair wages. Microsoft has been fighting for fair wages and benefits. Every company out there, I don't care who owns it, is the employees are not treated fairly because the stockholder and their owner come first. And what's left trickles down to the people who are doing the hardest work. So we want to talk about hard work. Let's talk about the employee, not the employer or the owner. They do less work, but they get all the credit. The employee suffers at the bottom, barely be able to pay his bill, while the owner rides around in luxury and is treated like a king. So the miseducation of the wealthy needs to start, because we are at a crossroads, this country is, and it's between the haves and the have-nots. We're at that crossroads. I don't know which way America's going to go, but I pray in my heart that we make the correct decision and we take care of the homeless. We take care of the hungry. We take care of the poor. We take care of the ones that need medicine and operation. We take care of the people that our Statue of Liberty says they'll take in and take care of. That's the true reality of what America should stand for, that we take care of each other. But right now, we're only taking care of the rich. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Brother Alex, Sister Susie, to all our participants, to you, the listening audience, who allow MPH Radio to come into your homes this evening, where we have had a dialogue with you around the theme, taxing the rich, is this a good thing? This is an issue that's not going to go away until we, the people, decide to take a collective position on what is best for us and how we can best move forward. This page must be filled. Can't continue to be missing. At the same time, we'd like to remind everyone that please support the people in your community that are trying to make your community a better community. That is to say, we ask you to go to the website www.a-aprp.gc.org and support your writer, your educator, Brother Bob Brown and Pan-African Roots. There's a 2-volume book that has just been released, titled We Demand the Full Disclosure and Dispensation of All Slavery Era. Support this noble cause. Remember, without information we cannot thank. Also, for the friends, supporters, and members, and people of goodwill, support MPH Radio upcoming tour as we salute and honor Emmanuel Joyner by working with the African Awareness Association as they take their annual Black History and Educational Culture Tour to Cuba from July 23rd to July the 31st. For more information, you can go to their website, which is www.aaa-cubacurs.com. For those who listen to this radio program and would like to support it financially, we welcome all blessings by sending it to Missing Page Ray History, Inc., P.O. Box 27, 782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. If you want to become a member and join our fan club as well, please email us at mphradio radio@yahoo.com. Again, our next program will be December 11, 2021 at 1 p.m. So put down your calendar, spread the word. Until next time, remember, let's continue to move forward ever, backwards never, by understanding that we can do this as we continue to fill in our missing pages of history. We see you on December 11. And if you had a choice of color, which you see an issue today, we want to know which one will you choose, my brother and sister.
One would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to